Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And a welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, it was a nominee for our bad martini earlier in the week. We saw the president on April 1st crowing about an alleged 7.1 million people gaining health insurance as a result of Obamacare. But the good news that we find out today, courtesy of BuzzFeed, is that as annoying as that announcement was, it took place in the afternoon in the Rose Garden. The administration wanted it to take place in prime time, but every single network said no. White House officials sought valuable primetime air for a rare impromptu Tuesday night address to tout the accomplishment of signing up more than 7 million people under the Affordable Care Act, but network officials refused to make the kind of accommodation they did previously for the announcement that Osama bin Laden had been killed, for instance. And Obama was left instead cutting into the much smaller audiences of Ellen and other daytime shows. So, Jim, as annoying as it was for those of us who follow this closely to have to sit through that, at least millions more didn't have to.
You know, this is a really pleasant surprise, because one of the aspects of the Obama presidency that's been really kind of, you know, irksome is this ubiquitous presence in popular culture, doing stuff like the Between Two Ferns interview with Zach Galifianakis or whatever his name is, and various aspects of this. And it used to be, well, you know, like, I mean, Reagan used to do Oval Office addresses in primetime. It used to be almost fairly standard for a president. Obama, actually, in his first couple months in office, was doing primetime news conferences. And we used to, if not look forward to them, it used to be, all right, well, let's, you know, hear what the president thinks. Sometimes he would get softball questions and not ask about the topic we wanted to. But more likely, what we found over time is that Obama would just filibuster, and he would offer these, you know, responses that went on for 7 minutes, 8 minutes, you know, 15 minutes, and just dragging on. You'd forget what the question was. He would dodge the tough question. It really ended up being not a particularly edifying or useful exercise. This one, which would just be kind of like him, you know, spiking the football and talking about how great, you know, Obamacare was turning out, never mind everybody who's lost their plans, never mind everybody who's dealing with higher premiums, never mind everybody who's in narrower, you know, doctor networks, never mind how many, some of these folks may not have paid, and oh, by the way, some of them may not pay next month, and all that stuff. He just kind of wanted to say, oh, Obamacare is a success, and remember in his thing, you know, the debate is over, this thing is not going away, yada, yada, yada. You know, we got to pat the networks on the back for saying, you know what, there's no real news here. Come back when you're killing a major, the world's most wanted terrorist, or aliens are invading, or there's some actual really big news going on. And it's kind of nice. It's probably the first time in a while that Barack Obama has not gotten what he wanted from major, you know, media entities.
On to the other big news of the morning, and that is the March jobs report. According to the Labor Department, the number is pretty much as expected, 192,000 new jobs. The overall unemployment rate remained at 6.7% in March. The big news that the mainstream media is tripping all over themselves to report today, Jim, is that, first of all, it was a horrible, horrible winter. So the fact that we're at 192,000 is really, really good given those terrible climactic conditions. But they also point out that as of the end of March, we have now once again restored the number of jobs we had before the recession. So they're patting themselves on the back for that, forgetting about the fact, I guess, that over the past 5.5 years, there's a lot more people in the job market. So there's a lot more work to be done here that's not getting done.
This was not a disastrous number, but it was a pretty meh number. And when you look at it, you know, basically over the past year, you know, folks like Politico's Ben White are noting that you're averaging in the neighborhood of 180,000, 190,000 jobs a month, which is pretty lousy by historical standards if you're coming out of a recession. He calculates it as being just barely above what you need to keep pace with the new people entering the workforce, whether they're high school graduates or college graduates who are entering. We've got this pretty crappy, bouncing along the bottom economy. No indication it's getting better. And one of the things kind of really frustrating about this is that, you know, obviously Republicans and Democrats have very different assessments of what is prompting the economy to be so lousy and sputtering so much. Because of the differences, it's not like Obama is really interested in revisiting many aspects of Obamacare. He says, well, you know, I'm open to reform ideas. And, you know, there are lots of, you know, Democrats in the Senate who say, well, I want to fix Obamacare. I don't want to repeal Obamacare. They never get all that specific about what precisely they want to fix. Democrats are hell-bent for leather on a minimum wage increase. Republicans are pretty convinced that that's not going to be a major helper of the economy and, in fact, will actually eliminate certain jobs. they're at loggerheads. And so we're just nothing policy-wise, the environment's not going to change. It's not like the global economy is taking off like a rocket. It's not like our schools are getting better so that we have dramatically better workers entering the workforce. The regulatory environment is still very unsettled because the rules for Obamacare change every couple of weeks. The whole attitude in Washington is, well, someday the economy is just going to get better by itself. We're going to get back to that, you know, 4%, 5%, 6%, you know, GDP growth. We'll create, you know, 300,000, 400,000 jobs in a month, all that good stuff. And it's just never, there's no indication that's on the horizon for the coming year. Kind of a silver lining to this is that this probably means, you know, Democrats will get slammed in midterm elections. But we've all kind of been, you know, dealing with this, you know, really substandard economy for 4 or 5 years now. And you read some of the coverage of how, you know, Democrats are really hoping that the economy improves as the midterms approach. Greg, you and I were reading the exact same stories, you know, 4 years ago.
Right.
I think they just changed the dates on these stories. If you see a reference to like Bob Etheridge or something, then you know they literally just cut and pasted from the last time.
I wouldn't be surprised. That's our last bad martini of the week. We really thought that Rachel Ray gushing over Joe Biden's skin would easily be the crazy martini of the week, and it probably still is. But one of our favorite, and we use that in quotation marks, Democratic Congressman Jim Moran of Virginia is a close second, I think, this week. Jim, he has decided that Congress, given its, what's its approval rating now, about 20%, low 20s maybe, the biggest problem facing Congress, members are not paid enough. Here's what he had to say.
I think that the American people should know that the members of Congress are underpaid. And, you know, I understand that it's widely felt that they underperform, but the fact is that this is the board of directors for the largest economic entity in the world. And a lot of members can't even afford to live decently when they're at their job in Washington.
So there you go, Jim. $175,000, right around there, is what a member of the House and Senate make right now. Leadership makes a little more than that. You're not going to win any friends, especially people who are struggling economically, like we were just talking about, by complaining that you make just a little under $200,000.
Yeah. Now, you almost have to admire the gumption of Jim Moran to kind of, you know, because these guys generally are unbelievably entitled. Clearly, he's speaking from the heart here. He genuinely believes that, you know, he's giving the taxpayer tremendous value for all the work that he does. Some people say it out of cluelessness. I think he knows he's always going to like it, but he feels like saying it anyway because, by golly, he's standing up for the principle that he deserves more money. Now, this is getting a lot of attention everywhere. Something that hasn't been picked up, and I put up on Campaign Spot, because I remember thinking, wait, isn't Moran wealthy? He represents, you know, Arlington and Alexandria. And the short answer is that not really anymore, at least according to his public disclosure forms. He says that he's got only $15,000 in a money market account, and otherwise he doesn't really have any assets. He's like, wait, how's that? Back in 2007, according to those same disclosure forms, they estimated he had about $12 million. But he lost a lot of money in the stock market, both in the 90s and in the, you know, last couple of years. Somehow he's managed to lose a lot of money in this market during the biggest boom ever. But then the next thing is he got a big divorce against a second wife who was very, very wealthy. Sorry, his third wife. because we all know about the Morans and women and that habit. So when he says, you know, oh, I'm underpaid, he really doesn't need the money because he doesn't have the money. Now, some would say, look, you blew it in the stock market, you big dummy, and, you know, you get divorced from a really wealthy woman, like you're going to have less money. That's the way life is, pal. But at least now we have a little bit of context. He's made some bad decisions, been unable to make his marriage to a very wealthy woman succeed. And now he basically wants a taxpayer bailout, you could say. Help take care of him so that he can take care of himself.
Well, part of what he said is that, you know, these members of Congress, they're living in sties or sleeping in their office, you know, that they need accommodation money. Well, if that's the case, you know, Jim Moran lives like 5 minutes from the Capitol.
So good point.
He should be paid in gas money.
Yeah. By the way, obviously, members of Congress do get reimbursed for certain transportation costs.
Yes.
But having said that, yeah, he's the last guy who's got a reason to complain. I will say, though, that one, you know, molecule of defense is that for most members of Congress who don't live within driving distance of Washington, D.C., you have to effectively live in two places at once. Obviously, you need your residence back home in your district or your state, and you need some place to live, you know, when you're not working in Congress, and some guys sleep in their office and stuff like that. that's a little bit tough. But on the other hand, you're making, you know, $174,000 a year. So it's not exactly like you're impoverished there. I mean, to most Americans, $174,000 a year is a lot of money. And if you have to manage, you know, two mortgages or one mortgage and a rental property or two rental property, most people can make it work okay. You know, I mean, now here's the other thing is that members of Congress are often hanging around with wealthy donors, right? They're always doing their fundraising and begging for money for their campaigns. So if you're a member of Congress, you spend a lot of time around millionaires and maybe billionaires like Tom Steyer and stuff like that. So in that sense, even though you're making $174,000 a year, which is a lot of money to a lot of Americans, that, you know, if you hang around millionaires and billionaires, maybe that, you know, you probably, oh, God, I'm poor. I'm poor making only $174,000 a year. It's income status disequilibration. You know, but look, I understand why you know, Moran is complaining about that, because he's going to become a lobbyist next year anyway. So, you know, life goes on for Jim Moran. He's always going to be okay. And, you know, there we go.
Again, good news, Virginia 8. He's only your congressman for another few months. So
the clock is ticking, and I'm sure he's probably interviewing right now. You know,
I can't imagine the firm that's excited to bring him on board, but he's been an appropriator for a long time. So anyway, Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
See you next week, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.